libraries, and it's been so transformative and healing for everybody involved. This Saturday, the youth are performing their very last show at IRCO, which is the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, in their event space located at 10301, that's 103rd and Northeast Gleason in Portland. It's free, and there will be refreshments. We're also unveiling the Crossing East archive of more than 100 broadcast quality oral history interviews recorded for the Crossing East radio series. And this is all happening Saturday at 2 p.m. at IRCO, 10301 Northeast Gleason, 103rd and Gleason in Portland. So I hope to see you there. More info at meteorites.org. David Arnett, Cherry, thank you for being here today.
Well, just hanging with you, and I'm honored just to work with the crew and the engineer.
Well, thank you to Tave Fache Drake. Has been awesome during this. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. Like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter N studio. Tweet me at stage, the letter N studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. More music by David Arnett Cherry at davidarnettcherry.com.
Hello, KBOO listeners. It is 11:30, and that is indeed the correct time. We have Art Focus coming up next with Joseph Galavan. He interviews Daniel Peabody about his show of 21 gunpowder-based drawings, appropriately called Residue. And that show is made possible by KBOO members and support from Chamber Music Northwest, featuring the 2017 Summer Festival starting June 26th. It's 5 weeks of music, over 30 concerts, and more than 60 artists and ensembles as well. There will be 8 world premieres and 2 theatrical experiences and a celebration of women composers that spans 9 centuries. More information at cmnw.org. That's cmnw.org.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Friends of Noise Fest, a daytime music festival Sunday, June 25th at 4 p.m. at Disjecta in Portland. Friends of Noise Fest features 9 bands, including Waterfronts, Glacier Veins, Kuone, Shortline, After Hours, and more. There's also going to be food, art, and an opportunity to learn more about Friends of Noise and their mission to support all ages music spaces in Portland. Again, that's Friends of Noise Fest, Sunday, June 25th at 4 p.m. at Disjecta, 8371 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My name is Joseph Galavan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Daniel Peabody. He is the gallery director at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery, and he's an artist. His show Residue is on now at Studio Orange in the South Waterfront through June 30th. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thank you for having me.
So, Daniel, people probably know you from going into Liz Leach because you've been there 11 years. You're the guy with the beard, shows people around. I've seen you in the street carrying art, like you're delivering it.
Absolutely. If we deliver art at Elizabeth Leach Gallery all the time.
And you've always been very good at explaining the art that she has in the gallery, at least to me, and I'm sure it's part of your job. But you have an art background, and you've produced a series of drawings which are now on show in a gallery which is a hair salon. But it's one of my loveliest hair salons I've ever seen. It's like clockwork orange, you know, it's all white inside and has cool chairs. And your art is up on the walls.
Yeah. So
it's called Residue because what you did was you burned gunpowder onto the canvas. So just tell us, where did that idea come from?
You know, the idea came about quite a few years ago. When I was in my graduate program at the University of Oregon, I have an MFA from the U of O, and I was, it's sort of a strange story, but I was basically doing ceramic and fiber sculpture that I was soaking in super saturated salt water. And when the water would evaporate out of the ceramic or the fiber, it would grow salt crystals on the exterior of these bundles of fiber or these ceramic vessels. It was a beautiful crystalline sort of surface.
How big were the crystals?
The crystals were the largest, maybe the size of like an eraser on the head of a pencil. Mm-hmm. The smallest would maybe be like I don't know, some kind of particle, a small particle, a large grain of sand, a small pebble, something along those lines. Some of them were very reflective, so it would catch the light in a really interesting way. Some of them were more matte. It was an interesting kind of variegated surface, which is what I enjoyed. I also sometimes did them on paper. And I was experimenting with that at the same time I was taking a art history class, and we were looking at an artist whose work I had always enjoyed, a Cuban-American artist, Ana Mendieta. And she was, as a young woman, she lived in Cuba, and then when the revolution there happened, her parents sent her and a sibling to, I believe, Iowa to live with and be raised by nuns, and the parents didn't make it out, I don't believe, during the revolution. And so it was quite a change for her. She did a whole bunch of work that was about her kind of experience as an exile, if you will, often using her silhouette as a motif. She also used unusual materials that she described as voodoo materials. She did a drawing with her own blood. She used earth and mud and salt and firecrackers and gunpowder. And she made a few pieces in 1984 and 85. And they were large slabs of like the size of a slab of a tree with a live edge. And then she carved her silhouette into them and filled it with gunpowder and lit it on fire. And they were shown as sort of sculptures. One of the things that really caught my eye when we were looking at these in art history class, when we were talking about her work in general, was a detail shot that showed the edge of that burned gunpowder line. And it reminded me of the salt crystals I was growing in my own studio. It was particulate, like the salt crystals. They were kind of the same, but different. So the salt was white and particulate and caught the light. But it was additive, so it was growing. The gunpowder was sort of the opposite in that it was black or brown. It was also particulate, but it was reductive. It was sort of burning away a chunk of wood or a small piece of wood. But together, they had this sort of interesting oppositional relationship that was mm-hmm. the same but different. And so
black and white and growing and reduction.
But both particulate.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I went out and bought some reloading gunpowder at, you know, like a hunting supply store and started experimenting very tentatively at first. This was back in 2002. And I was sort of, you know, putting it on a slab of stone or brick and using this very long lighter and sort of lighting it from getting as far away from it as possible when I lit it to sort of see what would happen. And, you know, just I'm not a person who's necessarily particularly involved with or really even particularly fascinated with like gun culture particularly. However, I ended up kind of learning a little bit about gunpowder through using it as a material. And one of the things I learned is that it's really only particularly explosive when it is contained. And so, of course, I was all this hype not really hype, but all this sort of anticipation of this big explosion when I lit it the first time. And of course, it was just this sort of like candle-like flame with a long, like as if a candle's wick was just too long and the flame was maybe, instead of an inch tall, 4 inches tall, mm-hmm. And made a little bit of smoke. And I did enjoy the marks that it left. And so I started experimenting with both the gunpowder and salt, in some cases together. I had an exhibition in one of the graduate school galleries at that time, experimenting with both the gunpowder marks and the salt crystals and different things. I did some pieces layering them, but in the end, the instability of the salt kind of made it not a viable medium long term.
Mm-hmm. This would just fall apart after a while.
Exactly. You bump it or you try to pack it to save it for a show, and it just, by the time the show gets there, it's all rubbed off. You know, it was a very ineffective mark making system. I know there are some artists out there who've managed to master it and make it more stable and ways to show it. I mean, I always. If I'm ever at an art fair out in the world or something and I see an artist working with salt, I'm always like, I have a little bit of insight into it and think, ah, they've really mastered the chemistry of this because this is not easy to work with. And in the end, that kind of the salt and gunpowder together fell away, but the gunpowder material became very interesting to me. I think for me, the kind of aha moment was when I stopped burning it flat on a table or the floor and I started burning it on the wall, using some kind of tool to hold it.
Right. So the tool you described is like you make a little wooden block, and you have it on a stick, and you put it against the wall with the gunpowder on it.
That's close to accurate. It's a wooden block that I just hold in my hand. I occasionally wear a glove, depending on how much of the gunpowder I'm using on the shelf or the receptacle, just in case any of the as the combustion happens, if any little particles fly through the air, if they land on your hand, it doesn't. I've had that happen a few times, and it'll leave a little mark and it'll sting for a moment. It's not a serious burn by any means, but if I'm doing something larger, I definitely wear a glove or I just hold it. The flame can be fairly hot though, so I make sure my fingers are sort of on the edge of the shelf or under the shelf, not sticking out above it. Mm-hmm. There's certain little things like that I've learned over time. But I do. I make these receptacles or tools. Mostly they're wood. Often they're sort of made out of like just a 2x4 or something like that, or a piece of plywood. And I cut a clean edge and sand a clean edge, which is the edge that goes against the wall. Mm-hmm. Many people suggest like, well, why don't you glue the gunpowder onto the wall? If you do that, then you're actually lighting the glue on fire. And then there's sort of a different chemical process, which is much more of a burn as opposed to a flash, if that makes sense. That would be much more difficult to control. I mean, the gunpowder, it sounds kind of crazy to be making drawings with gunpowder, but I've done it on paper. I've done it right on the gallery walls. I've done it on panels, on canvas, on a bunch of different things. Lightweight, like tissue paper, will light on fire, but most of the others hold up to it.
Mm-hmm. So you're making marks that they're really brown on white. So they could be rusty. You know, if you didn't know what it was, it could be rust. It could be like a tea bag. There's something kind of liquid or fluid about the mark. It's really two marks, right? It's a sort of a burn and then a shape, a kind of a smoky shape.
Mm-hmm. The particles of gunpowder burn sort of a charcoal gray brown color, and that leaves a mark. And then because I'm burning it on the wall, whether it's on a panel or it's actually directly on a gallery wall, I'm burning it with a panel vertical, not horizontal. And so the smoke trail from the flame goes up against the panel, and that leaves the residue. So it's not only the burn itself of the line or the small explosion, it's also the smoke and combustion around it. And that does create a 3D, kind of almost a 3D effect. It does have the look of sort of rust, some people were talking about it about it almost looking three-dimensional, like sort of shading in of the draping of fabric or, they talked a little bit about, rust or shape or contour, like the stitching, quilt is stitched and then washed, you'll get some puckering around the fabric where the stitching is, and that kind of 3D effect with like textiles. Some people have referred to it that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you have these marks. Then mostly like 2 or 3 inches, right?
Yes.
I think. Something like that. But then you arrange them in a pattern. So tell us about the different patterns you choose.
Yeah, the patterns tend to be pretty geometric. I'm because of the nature of the materials, I'm sort of limited to lines or what I call events, which are I use a block that is basically a quarter of a sphere cut into it. So you have about a half of a circle on the surface of the drawing. You have about a half of a circle or half of an oval of burn, and then the smoke trail from that. There are certain limits because I'm not using adhesives that I can do. Angles, I can shift the panel around to do different shapes, but mostly they're geometric shapes. Often they're based on quilt patterns, traditional quilt patterns, or textile weave structure patterns. So, you know, fabric, you know, you think of it as this supple, soft, fluid thing, but if you actually get down to the sort of structure of the cloth itself, of the various threads and fibers that make up the cloth, it all can be graphed and is graphed geometrically, and that's how textile designers, you know, will graph out often the pattern for a particular textile. You know, a twill is different than you know, a waffle weave or something like that. So often those weave structures or quilt patterns are the inspiration for a lot of the geometry.
Mm-hmm.
They also look back at sort of modernist art history. You know, I some of the artists that I really look to are like Agnes Martin or early Frank Stella, Kenneth Noland, Agnes Martin. There's a number of artists whose work I really look to, and the geometry looks, you know, kind of looks back to that in mm-hmm. certain ways.
So there's one, if you're in the gallery, look for residue panel number 30. And also 33, they're next to each other. They're both circular panels, and then one is sort of four nested right angles within the circle. The other one looks like a cross, and then each one is affected by the vertical nature of the burn. So the smoke going up leaves a sort of directional, mm-hmm. you know, residue. What are you doing there with the direction?
Yeah, well, so those circular panels, I believe those are 24-inch panels. And with number 30, which is the right angle piece, it's based on a housetop variation. Housetop is a quilt pattern. In the quilt pattern, it is concentric layers of slightly larger squares. I'm isolating about a quarter of the square, and you're having, so you have this sort of series of right angles. With some of them, I'm basically burning, because it's four lines, four different lines at a different length, a few inches apart, and I'm burning them so that the smoke is going vertical as it is wont to do. And then I'm actually turning the panel 90 mm-hmm. degrees and burning another series of four lines that align with those lines to create a right angle.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get that 90-degree turn on the panel, on the drawing, I'm actually having to turn the panel to do that, because I'm controlled by gravity and the flow of air, the smoke up the surface of the drawing, in order to get the look of what I want. Also, I think one of the things that maybe people will want to know is that not only am I, you know, drawing during this burn of a line, but I'm controlling which direction the smoke is going. So I'm rotating the panel so that maybe the smoke is going towards each other or away from each other. And that kind of creates a different effect visually.
Mm-hmm. Do you pivot the panel like a Damien Hirst spin painting?
I don't spin it. I mean, on a Damien Hirst spin painting, it's literally spinning quite fast.
But and it has a,
throwing paint on it and things like that. It's not going that fast. I mean, I'm manually.
Or you just turn it 90 degrees.
Just turning it 90 degrees.
So it's on an easel?
Yeah, or I either hang it right on the wall and I'm able to turn it there, or I have it on, I have some shelves that I, you know, rest it on against the wall and turn it that way.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Daniel Peabody. His show Residue is on now at Orange Studio, which is at 726 Southwest Gaines Street in the South Waterfront. And that show is on through June 30th, 2017. The big piece in the gallery, in the gallery / hair salon is on the wall. So it's a very big grid, and it's like 8 feet by 12 feet or something.
I believe it's 8.5 feet wide, and I think it's the height of the wall, which is, I don't know, 9 or 10 feet tall.
Oh, okay. Right. And is that going to stay there?
It's a site-specific temporary. It's for the run of the show. It's Residue 7 is the title. The others in the show are residue panels, so there's sort of the distinction within the way I keep track of the work that way. It is right on the wall, and it won't continue to exist. So at the end of the show, I'll actually treat the wall and paint over it.
Mm-hmm. Is it for sale? I didn't
notice. It's not for sale, but I sort of often or sometimes include them in exhibitions as a way to sort of prompt conversations around maybe a commission. So I've actually am talking with someone about maybe doing one in their home. We'll see.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah. So the prices are like $200 for the tiny ones, $700 for a 24-inch diameter circle. I saw another big one for $1,200. With a commission, how does it work?
Well, it'll be the price would be determined by the size of the space.
Mm-hmm.
So
if they did that in a home, do you have to sort of give them rules about how they treat it and how they avoid it getting all dinged?
I guess I could give them advice about that, but I mean, it's kind of up to them. It's theirs at that point.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the other shapes you chose. There's another one called the Event Oval, which is within a rectangular panel. It's a large oval, a sort of a horizontal oval. That's number 45.
Yeah, it's it kind of makes me think of like a spine or sort of a tortoise shell or something. It's interesting. It was one that didn't turn out exactly like I thought it would, but ended up really liking it. So of course it went into the show. I don't remember the dimensions of that one off the top of my head. It's kind of an unusual size. I think it's 22 by 33 inches. It has the panels themselves are birch plywood panels with canvas stretched over, and then there's a ground of paint, plaster, and water that is put on them, and then they're sanded and painted, and then the drawings go on top of that. What was the question about that one?
Well, you go off into these different patterns which don't really look like they're related to quilting or anything like that. They're
right.
More kind of freestyle.
Yeah, no, there are some. I mean, I think, obviously some of them, as I said, do look to textiles, but then some of them just are formal. Mm-hmm. Some of the artists I mentioned that are taking inspiration from, they're artists who are, modern artists that are working with formalism and playing with geometry. Agnes Martin talked in her work, her paintings, which are stripes or grids, about the grid as sort of being the universal form. And so there's certain forms that definitely come up. I think the oval is just sort of, there's just something really pleasing about an oval inside a square. I mean, if you think about someone like Ellsworth Kelly, a famous artist who just does these very simple shapes, he's sort of famous for saying the negative space is as important as the positive space. I think, that one is very much a formal piece, but it's also really about playing with the gunpowder I was using for a very long time. I started the series in 2002. None of these pieces are all 2016, 2017, but having started the series a long time ago, I was using a gunpowder I really, really liked, and it was discontinued in 2014. So I've had to...
What was it called?
It was a IMR 7625, and I have no idea what any of that really means other than it's the one that after experimenting a lot, I liked the color of the burn, I liked the quality of the burn, I liked the clarity of the particulate mark, and I liked the smoke and the amount of smoke. I've since, I'm using a blends, so I haven't found a gunpowder I like as well for this purpose. Of course, gunpowder is not designed for this purpose, so I've had to experiment a bit, and I've tried in the last few years, oh gosh, I don't know, probably 8 or 10 different gunpowders. And in the end, I didn't like any one of them, and the market made very well, and I started experimenting with with mixes. So some of them I do like a third of this one and two thirds of this one, and then together that makes a mark that I'm happy with.
So you're doing your own mixes like a winemaker or a coffee person?
I think people in those cases probably are more knowledgeable about the chemist, the kind of alchemy that they're doing. This is just kind of trial and error. Mix a little of this size particle with a little bit of this size particle and see what the effect is.
And you're still doing all this in an art studio?
I live in Southeast Portland and have kind of a 1930s condo townhouse, and I have a garage, and I turn my garage into like storage / studio space. I keep pretty busy with the gallery that I work at, and so plus I'm on several boards, so I don't have a ton of studio time. I think it's interesting, we were talking earlier about studio time, and I find that my really productive time on the days I'm able to do it is between like 9 p.m. and midnight.
So you're the guy in the garage experimenting with explosives.
I guess I am. I don't necessarily think of myself as that person, but I guess I am.
As long as your neighbors don't get wind of it.
I did actually invite my neighbors to the opening of the show at Orange Studio, and they were sort of like, oh, we're so relieved to know what's been going on. It was pretty funny. I guess I should have told them sooner.
So your background is in fabrics and fiber arts and things like that. You said you were making fabric where you would weave in steel wire so you could crumple material and form shapes.
Yeah, I have I did both my undergraduate degree, my BFA, a Bachelor of Fine Arts, and my Master's of Fine Arts at the University of Oregon. And my BFA was in Fiber Arts and Textiles. And then my Master's was actually not media specific. It was the work, as you can, because I started this work in graduate school, as I mentioned earlier, it's obvious that I didn't stick to textiles. I mean, there's definitely a relationship to it. But obviously, I've kind of shifted gears and kind of been a little more experimental with non-traditional materials. And because of that, it was an option when I was in that program to have a MFA in interdisciplinary art, meaning non-media specific. And that was the route I ended up going. But yes, for my thesis work for my undergraduate degree, I wove cloth that was a cotton warp, which is the threads under tension on a loom. And then the weft, which is the thread that you weave through by hand, was either the warp was cotton, but the weft was a mixture of either wool or mohair, usually soft, sort of somewhat lofty threads mixed with a steel wire. And it was a recycled steel wire. I happened to have a job at the time that in a printing place, and it was like the staple wire for the big printers, and they would take a spool of wire and then cut the staples and stick them into the CD jackets or whatever. And it was my kind of evening job when I was in college. And they had these recycling bins full of these mostly spent spools of this steel. And I'd previously been weaving baskets with steel, so I started taking it out of the recycling bin and playing with it. And I ended up including it in these weavings. And then they were woven into three-dimensional shapes. And so the tension from the steel within the fabric itself would hold the shape rather than having to starch it or something like that. The exhibition that kind of culminated in was called Chrysalis, and they were all sort of cocoon-like shapes.
Did they go all rusty?
They would have gone rusty had they been put outdoors, but I have actually three of them in my house right now, and they are not rusty.
Really? They survived? From the atmosphere?
Oh, yeah. I think it's actually like the same, I don't know if it's galvanized steel or stainless steel. I mean, it wouldn't be stainless steel, but some kind of galvanized steel that, if it's used for a staple, I guess a staple might rust over time if it got wet, but without getting these wet, they should hold up.
Mm-hmm. So you picked a strange medium, I would say. What are the limitations of it? Do you feel like you could go on making this and just vary the pattern, the layout?
I do think I could keep going. I mean, I think it's interesting that they, I have been working with it off and on since 2002, so about 14 years, or 15 years. Because the work is so formal, it's like every piece I make gives me an idea for another piece. So there's one in the show that's two squares that are sort of offset each other. It's residue panel number 29. But after I made it, I thought, well, gosh, if I added four more lines, I could make it into a cube. You know, so there's just sort of simple, like formal things. When you make something, you're like, oh, maybe I could add this to it next time. And it becomes something different. And that leads to another idea that becomes something different. You know, one of the things that this show, they're all white. The background is of the surface of the panel is all are painted white before the burn is done. I think I'm working on some right now that it's a stained canvas where I'm actually doing treatments to the canvas before I stretch it. And then I use like a clear gesso or a wheat paste to size the canvas. And then I'm doing the drawings on top of that, kind of in a dialogue with the earlier marks, which are kind of accidental, made with rust and dyes and different things like that. One of the things that I often excites me is the relationship between the controlled and the not controlled, or the order and the chaos. I mean, I think for me, conceptually, there's something interesting about taking a material that's explosive and kind of uncontrollable, if you might. You know, people don't think of fire as something that's easy to control, or gunpowder as something that's easy to control, but I'm using a shelf or these little wooden tools that I make to hold it. And then I'm basically controlling this kind of out of control thing to make something that I think is beautiful, that sort of show to me with the geometry and the abstraction sort of shows orderliness, if that makes any sense. There's something about the tension between the materials and the kind of chaos of the materials and the kind of order of the imagery. With the stained canvases, it's more about accidental mark on top of accidental mark, and it's a little bit something different, but that's interesting to me too. So one of the things that's really been consistent for me is, at least in the last few years, is playing with the kind of intentionality of things and whether a mark is completely intentional or unintentional, and how does an accidental mark